we're back at this 19-hour double episode.
You were heated. You were holding stuff in, I think. You needed to get that out.
Did I need to get out a little bit of a frustration?
I think so.
But honestly, it's not like I said anything that I haven't said before. I'm sure that's great for people to hear, that like I'm just saying the same shit over and over again. But I'm saying it because I feel like nobody in a position of power is, and we cannot continue this. I swear to God, I'm done. But like, the only thing I will say is you will know if the network really wants to move forward by the conversations and casting decisions that they are going to make about the future of New Jersey. You yeah. will know by who they bring back and or any potential, like, you know, come to Jesus, Hail Mary conversations about what coming back looks like. Because right now the cast is out of fucking control, mm-hmm. out of control, completely out of control, and infects other franchises.
For sure. And Dolores is over it too. She really is.
Let's just give, you know, she's dealing with a lot, okay? This yeah. guy is giving her a fucking engineering company or something.
She seems
work.
Happy about it. She seems
she's
happy about
not.
It.
You know she's not happy about it.
I don't know.
Okay, let's move on. Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Watched the newest episode and I thought, this is right. It's exactly right. I thought it was as close to a perfect episode as a gal can have, or just like in the top tier of like, this is what I like to see. A yeah. thousand things happening at once. Nobody is 100% right. Nobody to me is 100% wrong, except for probably John Jansen.
Goes without saying.
It goes without saying. And there's something that feels right. And I don't know how to say this as a Shan stan. So I want to be slightly careful, but I also want to be super honest, which is that Shan is dealing with a lot of stuff in her personal life right now, quite obviously, and it's at the core of this season, as it should be in many ways. But some of this stuff with Alexis is like so stupid and ridiculous that it makes me feel good. Like the question of whether Biscuit was adopted before or after, like she maybe was cast on this show or started.
I would want to know that. And I do want to know that.
I would want to know that. And I have heard from, I think Tamara said this or somebody said this or whatever, that Alexis had already adopted Biscuit. This, I feel like an idiot. Alexis, the way we're shifting from like children are being like intimidated to like, when was Biscuit adopted? That's what I want.
I am a Biscuit birther and I need to see a birth certificate.
Allegedly, Biscuit was already a part of Alexis's life before she started dating John. So this golden okay. retriever was born from a place of innocence.
Of love, not spite.
Of love.
All right, Biscuit.
Of love, not spite. He was, you know, it was, you know, a family planning. He was chosen to be here. He really, this was a beautiful moment for the continuation okay. of her family's, you know, life cycle and journey. And, you know, we love that. It's just so funny to me that, like, there's real stuff happening. And also, who gets to have ownership of the gym and also maybe the personal trainer? And if the mm-hmm. personal trainer is questioning whether or not Alexis is using dirty talk, how dare Shannon tell her personal trainer that Alexis was talking about fucking her boyfriend or whatever?
Yeah, but that to me felt so real. That to me felt like just another day in the OC. You know what I mean? Those are OC problems.
I'm not saying it's not real. I'm saying this stuff is funny. And like the presentation of it, of extremely high stakes of like, where will Shannon work out if John and Alexis are doing cardio? I'm not saying that that isn't a huge issue for Shannon. I'm saying that on the scale of issues for Shannon, the way that we are talking about when Biscuit was adopted by yeah. Alexis and who gets custody of the gym is so high stakes that it makes me feel so good, because that is like clean, dumb TV.
I agree.
I want that. I want yeah. people to be fighting over, or I want a golden retriever to be a punchline. Alexis walks into a scene with Biscuit on a leash and we're all laughing because we know Biscuit looks like the cousin of Archie Bador. And like, how dare you also have a golden retriever? That is iconic, perfect Housewives television.
I agree that the Biscuit thing, you know, is very, was very kind of lighthearted and funny. But also, I will say I'm really feeling, and I know you're a Shan stan, so you're going to feel me on this. I'm really feeling for Shannon in a real way, in a not, like, this is not even funny to me anymore way, because I do think it's egregious of John Jansen to keep going to this little boutique gym that she introduced him to and to a trainer she introduced him to. I do feel like you need to have your places where you can go and not see your horrible ex-boyfriend and have him be bringing his new girlfriend. I do think that there's something spiteful there from Alexis and John in doing that.
I don't know how much of it is spite versus laziness, but I think Alexis should be concerned regardless. Like, it sounds like this man really, as many men do, of like, all right, I'm starting dating her, so let's send her some flowers and take her to my favorite place. And then if that falls out, I'll date somebody else and send her flowers and take her to my favorite place, because they're just not creative or imaginative.
I don't see Alexis being concerned, even if he started to lay out outfits that Shannon wore and having her put those on. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see her being concerned at all.
Why?
Just because it doesn't seem like any of the stuff bothers her, like going to the same hotel. That would bother me if we went out on some big date and I found out it's like the same hotel that you took your ex or restaurant for her birthday. I'd be like, that's kind of weird.
Okay, disagree with that. I think that what Alexis is saying is that she cares quite a bit. She just doesn't know some of this information. She hasn't had the opportunity yet to dispute John taking her to the same hotel for her birthday or anniversary or whatever that he took Shan. Like, I don't think she's chill about that.
You don't
that.
Think she's heard that? You don't think she knows that? Okay.
Correct. And I think she's going to figure out a way to blame Shannon for it. But you
probably
she is, like, Alexis to me right now is operating as the exact opposite of chill. And at one point in the episode, she said something and I was like, oh, babe, say that again. Like, I literally was like,
wait, was it the line where she's like, she needs to redeem my man's name?
It is exactly that line.
I knew it.
Where
I
said, first off, thinking that your guy's ex-girlfriend is responsible for making him look better is so funny to me, because it's so dumb. Like, that to me tells me that this man is in such control of what your job is by coming on the show that has nothing to do with you and everything to do with your relation to him. Yeah. What you are coming in here saying is not like, I really want to grow my relationship, or like, I want to show the side of my life. You're saying that your goal is to ensure that Shannon is responsible to her ex-boyfriend. And that is such flawed thinking that it makes me actually concerned.
That's Alexis.
I don't think she's a fucking idiot. Don't give me those eyes. Don't give me those eyes.
I'm a fact-based type gal, but okay.
I think she can be dumb, but I think she's grown in other ways too. And it's just like,
I think when it comes to men, she falls into a kind of a role of a pick me is what we call it these days, but it really is sort of like does their bidding. You know, just does what believes them. She's never going to side with the woman. That's not even a realm of possibility that maybe he was horrible in that relationship. It's all Shannon.
And that Shannon isn't telling the truth about, I guess, how great John was. But if you're arguing that your ex-girlfriend doesn't remember the good times, I mean, why would you be pushing that? Because couldn't the next step be, wow, he was really great, let me try to get back together with him again? Like, how do we connect those dots?
I think her goal is to try to make it seem like she's really won here. Like that JDJ is a prize, you know, and everybody needs to know it. And Shannon's crazy, or Shannon's ridiculous, Shannon was toxic, all of these things that women get labeled at the end of a relationship.
Can I just say one thing for the record?
Hmm.
If you are fucking your man four times a day,
Can we talk about it?
I think that's a quantity versus quality issue. Because if you need to fuck him, or he needs to fuck you, or you need to fuck each other four times a day, what I'm hearing is it's not good. So we need to do it four times to feel like we're working toward a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're just trying to exhaust each other. That to me is not good sex. That's just sex and then sex and then sex and then sex.
Yeah, no, it seems like this whole trend, can we just be done with it? Of like Larsa, these other people being like, I had sex 15 times a day. These are not good things. These are not things. These are not goals. These are not things people want. You know, I don't know why we need to. And they're giggling. They're like, and the day's not even over yet. It could be a 3 to 4 time a day situation. No one asked, ma'am, this is a Wendy's. What are you talking about? Why are we saying this in this episode? Literally no one asked. And so I think it's funny then that the trainer, this whole trainer drama that he allegedly brought up, like, you know, that she was talking about her sex life.
And then that John like exploded and had a tantrum.
Well, that's shocking, isn't it?
I mean, not really when you think about Chan's version of John. I don't know how Correct. John throwing a tantrum fits into like Alexis's version of John.
I don't know. I think she probably saw it as a good thing. She probably thought it as a good thing because he was like defending her honor or mad on her behalf.
Or maybe they had like an extra 15 minutes to begin again. I don't know.
I don't know. I hope we get to see the trainer. I'm going to have to go back to episodes and see, did we meet this trainer? Because it seems like there's two trainers, one Steve and one Alex. And I don't know who said the sassy line back about her talking about her sex life. But I'm like, can we get this person on camera for a minute? I want to know, how does that happen? Like, who's got the gall to be like, oh, really?
Well, and also, where's Dr. Tim? Where's Dr. Tim? What happens to Dr. Tim?
I don't know.
Who is a chiropractor, I think?
Yeah. Yeah, that season after her divorce, he stepped in and, you know, had her coming in there for like a serious plan on how to get back on track. And now we don't see him anymore.
What do you think the rest of the season is going to look like for Alexis?
Oh, not good. Not well, bitch. I think Alexis is going to deal with the aftermath of coming onto a show and coming for a pretty universally liked person in her hardest time. Shannon, I think, is universally liked, wouldn't you say? I think most people watch the show and they feel for Shannon. You don't think so?
I know in my universe, she's universally liked. I don't know that Shannon is universally liked.
Especially this season. I think anybody watching the show can completely understand and probably has been there to where you have this toxic relationship, you break up, and your ex starts dating somebody that is in your kind of periphery just to try to get at you. And people can kind of commiserate with that, and they know what that's like.
I think that there could be some version. Nothing in the Bravo universe is ever universal, except if your take is like everyone is complicated. But even that, no, that's not universal. I think there could be some version of like maybe not universal, but like majority empathy for Shannon. But I think like is different.
Oh, yes, yes, true, true. We are fickle with our likes.
We are. I am very generous with my likes towards Shannon. Hashtag stand for Shan. But I don't know that. I think from what I'm hearing from people, which is like a weird thing to say to a Shan stan, like this is the first season where Shannon is liked. And I'm thinking like some of us have been doing this hard labor for near a decade at this point. So like go fuck yourself.
I start charities, Megan. Like some of us have been on this ride.
Some of us have been putting in the hard labor for so many years when it was maybe tough for other people to understand our truth.
She's got some iconic moments of like literally breaking down on camera, but you're with her. I'm like, tell him.
Remember when Dr. Dubrow called David Bador a penis because he thought he was being funny instead of saying a dick? You're a penis. That will never escape my brain. I wish it would. I wish it would.
Great. Now it's in mine.
Sorry, every now and again, it just like seeps in where I'm just like, oh, my God, in that moment where Terry Dubrow called David Bador a penis, like I'll never get over that. I wish I would. I want to scrub that memory right out of my hair, but I can't scrub that use of penis when you're trying to call somebody a dick and you think you're being fun. He thought he was being fun in that moment.
Probably.
So, I mean, you know, Tamara seems to be doing in real time, but also at points on the show, kind of invalidating some of that, I guess, of saying Shannon, either Shannon isn't deserving of the empathy or Shannon wasn't appreciative enough of my empathy toward her, or maybe there was too high a cost. What do you think about Tamara?
I don't know. It seems like Tamara is still in this, because a couple of seasons ago, she sort of broke. She snapped. And she was like, I can't do this anymore with you, Shannon. These late night phone calls and going off for hours at a time. And, you know, I remember her venting to Eddie on camera, and it's understandable. You know, Shannon was going through stuff and she was exhausting her support system about it. And they were like, look, make a change, but we can't like keep hearing this same thing all the time. And they were concerned for her too. So Tamara has, and along with Heather and some others, have been on this ride where they're frustrated by Shannon and equally concerned for her at the same time. So I think Tamara still feels that exhaustion, even though I think she also sees that Shannon's in a bad way.
Yeah, and there are also some, there's a little bit of an opportunity here, which like I don't begrudge Tamara of feeling exhausted, because I think we've also heard that critique from Gina and Emily to a certain extent.
And Heather.
As well. And Heather, and like anybody else who's been in the cast. So like I'm not denying the reality that certainly was seemingly true for several people. And I don't think Shannon would deny it either. I think her argument back would be like, so much of this is circumstantial, but if it's one circumstance followed by another circumstance followed by another stance, we sort of need to see a little bit of a pattern here. But I also wonder for Tamara, like the opportunity of it. I feel like she sees Alexis. She understands that she's in a weird spot right now with Shannon and with Vicky. And I think she sees there's that glimmer, that gleam. What's the word? There's that gleam in her eye.
Glint in her eye.
There's a glint in her eye of like, this is where I'm going to be able to run free. Like, this is my opportunity to really, really, really like cut the knife as deep as I can allow myself to go.
Yeah, I mean, her following her when she sees she's going to the bathroom, you know, last week, that she wanted her moment with Shannon for sure, even though Shannon was already going through it. And that was a rough one. So, yeah. Tamara's been on the show a long time. She knows what the show requires, and she's willing to give it.
Yeah, and you know, she's a great housewife in that way. But it also means that like maybe she can't be trusted, or know that if you're embarking on a relationship with this person and it turns, it's going to turn really fast. And, you know, just kind of be careful, because when the winds change for Tamara and she becomes a goddamn tornado, just make sure your house is secure. Shout out Jen.
Yeah. And I think Shannon knows that, you know, so I think she knew what was going on, like even when she went in the hallway and they talked and all of that. So hopefully they're not going to have a terrible moment, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, the reunion is going to be, I don't think it's going to take going to the reunion, but I don't know. I feel like Shannon is now less trusting of Tamara than she was before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This whole falling out with the three amigas, that's pretty monumental for them.
Yeah. I just don't know what that will mean for this show. And that's not me saying anything that's like, this is concerning. I just think like maybe there'll be the two archetypes of like, we don't fuck with each other. And maybe they'll have moments where they'll be able to have fun. Like, I think that they understand each other, and also that they both need this show to continue. So I think they extend each other a little bit. They will extend each other a little bit of grace moving forward, but I don't think that they will be tight again unless someone joins the show and it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Correct. Then, yeah, I think so.
Then I could see them uniting and, you know, utilizing their internal resources to break somebody 100% all the way down. I could see that. Yeah. But I don't think that person exists on the cast currently.
No, I don't think so. No. I mean, other than, but Alexis is kind of like a moot, like not really, not that kind of person.
No, I don't think people will care about her enough. And I don't,
no, exactly.
I don't even mean that to be like a dick. I just don't think
she's. No, same.
Yeah. Speaking of caring, how did you feel about all things Gina v. Jen?
That was crazy, wasn't it? Jeannie got real heated. I mean, I just felt like the amount of anger she had, I didn't think it really matched the situation. I understand that her perception is that she lost out on a deal. And in the blow to her new career as a real estate agent and potentially losing out on a relationship with another realtor that could have resulted in money in her pocket is what she's really angry about. But I think at the end of the day, Gina and others are frustrated with Jen because Jen is showing like she's not picking herself back up the way that they had to. And I think that that is not only disappointing to them, but also scary. So that they've all had to deal with that fear of having a divorce from their husband and having to figure their life out. Tamara has, you know, it's like that's a commonality in the Orange County. I'm so tired. It's 5 a.m.
It's 3:30 in the morning. Thank you.
But like, here's this woman who's been going through this divorce for 3 years. And nothing has changed. She hasn't done anything to make herself more impervious to like this financial stress and strain and bad things happening. And I think that's the real core of Gina's frustration. But at the same time, I felt like it was overblown the way that she went for her in that little coffee shop.
As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And like many people, the conversation about saving and investing can feel really complicated. And for me personally, often feels like it's out of reach. Like I'm joining a conversation in the middle of it. I'm not quite sure really how to start, which is why I am so thankful for Acorns. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change, BCC, PK, and DREIT. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. That's perfect for me and my life. I want to make positive change, but so often it's hard to figure out where to begin. Acorns does that work. I always felt like in order to start investing, I needed to have one big lump sum. But Acorns takes away that kind of stress. It's small, important changes that you can make in your life for your future. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last, when it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation, it's not just water, it's Fiji water.
Well, I also think it's tough if the person that you feel like betrayed you in some way or is like discounting the harm of your behavior or whatever on their professional life, when that person sits down and is like, you owe me an apology because I reacted to things poorly. You know, like I think that's, you're not setting up a great environment when Jen sits down and feels like she's the victim of this person who Jen seems to believe didn't, at that point at least, didn't really do her any favors, or the favors are invalidated because now she feels that Gina's talking shit.
Yeah. And then I totally get it too. Like I was laughing, you know, when Jen walks in and she's in full glam and people are talking about her car that she was still driving a couple episodes ago. And, you know, so it's one of the situations where your friend is saying, I can't pay my bills. Mm. You know, I can't afford things. And they're calling her a squatter. Like she's living in a house that she's not paying rent for, but she's still driving this baller car and going to all her hair appointments. And it's almost like the moment that the Bravosphere witnessed where, you know, Kim Zolciak, we find out like they are absolutely losing the house. They are in financial straits, even though for a year she had been saying, I'm in my house at Christmas. I'm not losing my house. And you're wrong. And it's like it finally all fell out. And we see that she's, you know, this like very dramatic footage of her, Croy, and they've got like police coming to the house, but she's just coming back from a hair appointment. And people are like, how are you still going to hair appointments? You guys are so in debt, like you're losing your house. So it's that kind of frustration, I think, that Gina's feeling towards Jen. Mm. So it's a lot. It's layered. I think it's layered.
I think it's layered. And I think, you know, it's probably not helpful that in real time, word on the street, judging by like court documents, is Jen and her ex-husband got sued for non-payment of that yoga studio, and they were court ordered to pay back like $160,000 by the end
of this
calendar year. That's an awful lot of money for someone who is also not getting an awful lot of money.
Like, what? I have so many questions about this gym situation. Tamara said there's multiple owners. You know, Jen has said she makes $50 per class, but then that they're not getting paid, the owners. I don't know. She needs to get out of it, I think.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like you have a conversation about Shannon, and it's like if it's coincidence after coincidence after coincidence, do we see a pattern? With Jen, I'm like, oh, is this a part of that original lesson of like, just assuming that things will happen and be paid for? Or is this just another coincidence after another coincidence? Like, at what point do we acknowledge here that this is a grown-ass woman who is signing contracts that she cannot pay? Like, she does not expect to be responsible for them. Or rather, maybe this is genuinely like she signed an agreement with her then husband and things fell apart and her circumstances changed. Like she signed the lease for that house. She thought he was going to pay because I think she said for 3 years prior, he always paid and then something changed. So I think a person could make a valid argument in response that like if you were possibly more aware of your financial situation, maybe this wouldn't be as much of a shock to you when bills stop getting paid. But, you know, like countering myself, I could also understand if maybe she's being told by her ex or something, the check's going to come because it always has before. And then it changed. She just, I don't know. I actually don't even know the end of that sentence, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, and she admitted, I don't know anything about finances. I don't know it. And Heather at one point says like, well, let's fix that. Like, let's fix that. So that's the issue. And I remember somebody saying to me when I was first like starting, you know, to work kind of professional jobs, you know, after college. And it was like, you can't just say to yourself, what do you want? That's a two-part question always. It's what do you want and what are you doing about it? And so this woman to have this complaint, I think that's the quickest way to exhaust people. For me, it is anyway. Like if you have a friend who's got a problem, but it's always the same problem. And not only is it always the same problem, but then they never do anything to actually address that. And it's something that's easy to address. Not easy, but like it could be addressed. It's not outside of the realm of possibility to improve upon this correct, you know, situation, whatever it is. I think that's the frustration too. So the same way that people get frustrated by Shannon having the same issues or whatever it is, ruminating but not taking action, they look at Jen and they see the same thing because Jen didn't get sympathy from anyone on the cast. I think that's important. Usually there's somebody who just will fully agree with whatever issue another person is having. Nobody on the cast said, Jen, we totally get it. There was nothing you could do. Every single person, Tamara, all of them, were like, well, you know, you shouldn't be going into houses that cost that much that you can't pay. And so I think that's the issue for them is like, this stuff seems like you should be able to get a handle on this. And she's not.
Well, I also feel like it ties into a divorce argument that you make when you're in litigation of like, this is the lifestyle that I've
standard
been accustomed
of, yeah,
to.
That's the standard of living. And so I kept thinking maybe that was going to come up. I don't know. But, and I think she was trying to, I think she was trying to say like, I don't have a settlement. Like I'm trying to get a settlement. So, and, but now she has one. Now she has one. And it does seem kind of low compared to, you know, staying in a house that was probably a really high rent. I think the amount of money she gets for alimony is like $1,700 a month. And then her child support is, you know, much higher. So
not much. I mean, it's like $4,500 or so. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's got many kids. Yeah. So,
I mean, this is also the difficulty of this person coming in and us not necessarily seeing her life before or quite literally not seeing her life before she got married. We don't know anything about Will. We don't know anything about their financial situation. But I thought maybe I was misunderstanding things or maybe I was understanding them well and they were just kind of flaunting wealth they didn't have. But I thought her financial picture was much brighter in terms of like when this is ultimately settled, she will be okay. Like there likely will still need to be changes made. But what we're hearing about the actual, you know, terms of the settlement is, as you said, like it's a much, much lower number when you think of her standard of living. And then I think of her standard of living with Ryan. Like he quite literally has taken control of some of her debt. She is allowing this man and I don't mean this as a criticism, but like taking the opportunity when he says, you can have my car, let's get rid of your car. And also I'll carry over your $24,000 or $25,000 of debt to get you out of being underwater.
Yeah. So she was behind on the car. And I think that was a very similar amount to how much she owed in rent. So we're talking about this woman being behind like $50,000.
No, I think it was that was the rent.
What? No, that was her car. She said she was behind on the car $24,000. And I think that Gina in a previous episode said she was behind on rent like $24,000 or $25,000. I'll have to go check, but I feel like those were separate things, right?
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. I thought it was he was carrying over her debt from the rent and tying that
maybe. It was late. I was watching it late. Maybe I have to watch it again. So maybe I just didn't hear how much she was behind on the car. I don't know.
I think my question to her is like, okay, but now who's going to take care of Ryan?
I don't know. He doesn't seem to be stressed out. He doesn't seem to be stressed out in these episodes about finances. I was really surprised. Like they're in his backyard at one point and they get into the water and it's like it's almost like a lazy river. Kind of a little thing that's cut out into the hardscape. That really threw me. I paused it and I was like, how much money does this man have? Did the house come like that? Did he put that in? That just gets me ruminating in a bunch of other directions. I'm like, you got to put some real infrastructure in if you're going to have like a little mini lazy river, you know, and she takes her bra off and throws it and whatever. So, I mean, they seem to be enjoying life, whatever financial situation he's in. I don't know.
Well, this is, of course, before we find out how he's really signing his like 1099.
I need to do a timeline. How many months before, I wonder? Because,
well, there were rumors that something was going on with Ryan and the FBI. Tamara mentions it later on in the season. I think Heather mentioned that she heard some shit.
But I need to know, like, what the filming schedule is compared to what the Ippy, you know, trainer thing. I did a dive on that of what his actual involvement was with this gambling and trading and stuff. So it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if he's aware of it. He had to be, though, because his best friend's house was raided. Anyway, I will do this. I'll do this later. Timeline.
Wait, his best friend's house was raided when?
I had it in my dive, but it wasn't that long ago. But I feel like they started filming at the, I feel like the scenes that we are seeing are happening after his best friend's house was raided.
Oh, my God.
I need to do a timeline.
That's not great. I wonder if people are hearing stuff in Orange County during this time. Is Jen one of those people?
Probably not. I don't think Jen's going to hear about much. I think Jen's going to Jen every day and do her yoga class. And I don't think she's hearing things about Ryan. And if she is, she's willing them away.
Okay, listen, I know that we have recorded for 15 hours, but there are two Orange County points that I absolutely need to get your thoughts on.
Hit me.
One is a, you know, a big conversation between Emily and Shane about health and lifestyle and sort of regimented behavior, where we're getting into a conversation about Emily weight loss, her perception of herself and her body if she doesn't go to the gym one day and goes another, sort of a little bit of an obsessive focus on weight, focus on quote unquote wellness and health, and having those two seemingly like equal each other, and also how your mental health can be affected by weight gain and weight loss. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what can be obviously a very triggering conversation for people, but I think an important one.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely relatable, per usual. Emily is our kind of like relatable queen, even, you know, when she was in the sauna with a Subway sandwich two seasons ago. Whatever she's done, she's been just funny and honest about it. And I think this is no different. She's just being really honest with us about, like, I wanted to get really fit. I got really fit. And now I'm kind of in a place where I don't know what to do with my, I can't stop working out, because what if I stop working out and it starts going backwards? And, you know, this is a weird place to live, Orange County, and everybody looks like perfect and amazing. And, you know, Shane, I loved his confessional moment. I could not think of another confessional from Shane that was extremely serious and loving to Emily and thoughtful. Anyway, I thought that he really shined in that episode, talking about supporting her, wanting her to, you know, be her best, but also seeing that she's sort of in a place now where she feels, you know, bad if she doesn't make it to the gym. She's sort of taking it out on herself if, you know, mentally, if she's not meeting the standard in her mind that she needs to hit every day.
Yeah, and I think weight loss can be a really difficult conversation because it can be really triggering for people. Now, is one person responsible for another person's triggers? I would argue no, but there's also an overall sensitivity that a person can have. It is not necessarily in and of itself disordered to want to lose weight. People are allowed to want to lose weight. We've now embarked on this next chapter of wellness where the conversation about losing weight is in and of itself flawed. I would argue if a person chooses to lose weight, they do so in a way that is healthy and they potentially achieve their weight loss goals or not. That is, the person has every right to do that. And weight loss in some areas can be incredibly helpful for other people's various like health diagnoses. Like that can absolutely have a positive benefit to a person's mental and physical health. And we are now at this point in wellness where you cannot have a conversation about weight loss without it being perceived as negative or toxic. I disagree with that. I also, while being cognizant of my own shit, am like diagnosed eating disorder, diagnosed body dysmorphia, and I've been in treatment for it for a couple years. And it took years for my therapist and psychiatrist to have a conversation with me about how disordered my wellness journey had become. Like I can tell you what I had to eat years ago, and I don't remember who I talked to yesterday, but I remember people saying to me, you know, after I had lost a significant amount of weight, which started because of physical illness, and I thought I was taking care of myself for being really regimented and listening to doctors' advice of like things to eat on an elimination diet, which then became disordered. Mm-hmm. It did not need to be disordered, but it was also supported by a wellness community that in many ways has become toxic, where like it's two different sides of the spectrum. One side is you cannot talk about one opposite side is like you cannot talk about weight loss, otherwise you're toxic and you're a part of a system that focuses on weight loss. How dare you? The other side is like, so you're not allowed to talk about wanting to lose weight because that's toxic and bad. The other side is like, oh, it's all focused on wellness, so we're not going to talk about weight loss. We're going to talk about clean eating and what clean eating does to your body. And there's a certain perception of what people in the weight loss industry look like. And everybody wants to achieve that version of wellness. And we're going to talk around weight loss by saying we're focused on health. Like both of those are potentially dangerous. And like what I might do, there are aspects of talking about weight loss in ways that like I am allowed to do that are potentially healthy. Not everything I'm going to do in my life is disordered, but I have an extra level of needing to pay attention to certain things because there are ways my brain sorts and organizes stuff that can become disordered. So when we talk about someone who's really focused on wanting to lose weight and keep the weight off, that doesn't necessarily mean it is going to be a disorder. But when you are engaging in behaviors that sound disordered, that's something to possibly look at. And it's like it's when we do things that are so, 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 so regimented, that's when there's this gray area, because it can be tough to have these conversations because people carry with them a lot of triggers. I'm not responsible for another person's triggers, but I am responsible for myself and my own like thought patterns. And it becomes really difficult because like, if I, for example, have spoken about having body dysmorphia and eating disorder, people attribute anything that I will ever say in the universe as being defined by that. But I'm not just that, and I don't behave in just that manner. So watching Emily talk about this is familiar to me because I know that feeling of like feeling good when I've lost weight, which you have every right to feel. But then if it goes to another level, and it's all about control. It's like how I control my mental health is framed around my weight or framed around how I look at being active. It can become really, really difficult. So I appreciated, as you said, what Shane said, because he was kind of advocating for a little bit of a middle, which is what people for me in treatment advocated for. And I just thought, how dare you try to take away this thing from me that I think of as health? It took literal years because I didn't understand it. And I was like, you don't get to take away this thing from me that's been important to me. But it's kind of looking at the scale of all of this, which I think is important. I don't think I'm communicating this in any way effectively. What I'm trying to say is like Emily in talking about this, in Emily's talking about weight loss, you know, if the theme of this conversation is Pandora's box, it opens up a lot for people. And it's like our own experiences are going to project onto her storyline. It does not mean that what I have experienced is what Emily is experiencing, but I do want to acknowledge that my experience might influence my opinions of what Emily is going through. And a big part of that is not by definition, like what I live with. It's really how I was treated, how I sought treatment, the benefit of therapy and of like eating disorder specific therapy, trauma specific therapy, where I can look at Emily and talk about it and not feel connected to it. There's a little bit of a disassociation, which I think is actually beneficial in talking about this because it's very, very complicated. And like some of that complication isn't necessarily Emily's story. It's me talking about my story, and Emily's not responsible for my story. Emily is responsible for her own.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. And we're all looking at it with our own histories and perceptions, and especially as women. I mean, Emily, she would have also, you know, been around when it was like that extremely ultra thin 90s toxic Snackwells, you know, era that many of us were children and young people growing up in this world and being told like being as thin as humanly possible is the goal. There needs to be less of you. You know, that was like the message, toxic message for a really long time. And, you know, as dysfunctional as the health and wellness space can be, I am thankful that it's not just focused on, you know, thinness anymore, that there are so many people online that are really about sort of just wellness in general. But that too, you can fall into that. I think you can apply toxic behavior to just about anything. I mean, for me, I was trying to like hit 100 and something grams of protein. I made it 4 days. I had to let it go because it becomes something that you, for me, my thing that I used to do back in the day, I think I mentioned it to you, was like I would count my calories and my macros all day long, and it became like compulsory. And so I had to just stop. But for years I did it, and it just took up too much space in my brain. So the same way that people who are taking Ozempic are saying, I'm so thankful for this because it stopped that food noise. For me, it was like math. It was like 1 pound of fat is 3,500 calories. If I have a deficit of this, and it would just go all day in my head. And it wasn't really about any, you know, goal or anything. It's just, this is the way you're raised. Like you learn, people tell you that, you know, when you're in high school, like, well, this math, and if you had a death, and it's just, as a woman, you're just trying to be this thing that's never going to be perfect. Like all the hours of our lives that we waste saying, if only my thighs didn't touch, and if only this, and we're just so lucky to be alive and to be healthy. And we have this noise in our brains that I do not think that men have. They're not trained the same way to be thinking all the time of, am I hitting this standard? They just go out there and, you know, do their thing. I'm sure there's some pressure. I'm not discounting if men feel pressure. I'm saying for women, it's much greater, and it always has been, and it likely always will be. So I am thankful for people saying, you know, I just care about whether or not I'm healthy. I'm not trying to have it be about image anymore.
Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build your own perfect clothes with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. I am so thankful to Armoire because I was in a genuine pickle last weekend. I was rushing to New Jersey, shout out NJ, the Garden State, not hunting for new housewives, but going to a friend's baby shower, and I had literally nothing to wear. So thank goodness for Armoire. I opened my bag from Armoire, grabbed this beautiful, bright lime green Sachin and Bobby midi dress, and it fit like a glove, and it saved me all of that extra stress. There are so many benefits to Armoire. You always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, and Armoire is women-founded and women-led. Right now, AGs can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/andyscrolls. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/andyscrolls to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images.
because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost it a thing, but I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to JLo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that JLo glow for yourself with JLo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is JLo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try JLo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that JLo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month, dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improve sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today.
And the asterisk I would say to that in this conversation is, number one, weight loss is not always indicative of health. And I have had
absolutely
people, when I have gained weight or lost weight, where the conversation about health could be magnified on other side and is not in fact accurate. And I've had people, I remember someone I knew that like was making money in the wellness field who saw me out and was like, wow, you got so healthy. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm the sickest I've ever been.
Yes. Have we talked about that? Like, I remember I lost like 20 pounds in a month one time. I was so sick. My autoimmune was really flaring and I, you know, nobody really like, I hadn't treated it yet. I won't get into it, but like, you know, people are like, you look so good. I'm like, I'm half dead. Like skin is falling off of me. Like I've never felt worse. And I remember thinking, what would I give to be me just at my heaviest weight that made me so upset, but just happy and eating whatever I want to eat, laughing with my friends and not being able to, I mean, at that point, my issue was like, I couldn't keep weight on. It's just such a horrifying thing. And for me, it changed everything. So I would never wish an autoimmune on anyone. But the one gift I had was after that was over, I have not ever, you know, looked at myself and been like, I'm so mad. I'm so mad that I'm like, I'm so thankful that I'm healthy today. So, and that has stuck with me. And that I'm so grateful for, because my whole life before it was a different perspective.
100%. And the only other thing, and we are wrapping literally immediately, the only other thing I would add to this is when there's a conversation around like eating disorders and potentially uses of medications and weight loss, often people overlook a huge, huge number of people in the eating disorder world who deal with binge eating, compulsory binge eating. Mm-hmm. And they're often shut out of conversations around weight loss and ways to help them manage their eating disorder. And it's so interesting to me, like there's such flawed logic of talking about eating disorders and focusing on eating disorders involved in weight loss, like talking about anorexia, which can involve people of all sizes, by the way, number one. But number two, when we talk about, which I'm not going to get into, but like
aids for managing binge eating disorder and compulsory binge eating. Often they are left out of that conversation where you are made to feel bad for potentially wanting to lose weight, but it's not actually often about weight loss. It's about managing disordered eating around binge eating. And it's so unfortunate that people who may talk openly about using aids, potentially including Ozempic or other stuff, I really sort of stay out of a lot of that conversation. But it's just so fascinating to me the way that people are often shamed when they talk about weight loss, where it's like, you guys aren't totally, you're projecting so much of your own experience, or you're not maybe informed or aware enough, which I can completely understand, that like you're leaving out a big part of the audience here of people who might genuinely require or have medical advice about how to deal with an eating disorder that is often not spoken about or looked at differently. And it's just, it's really unfortunate. And it's also really complicated. And I apologize for bringing this up at the tail end of the episode, because it deserves more conversation, and it will. But it's also something to just kind of like think about, of like the closing message, I think, of this episode, of just having a little bit more sensitivity around our own triggers. Like when you are triggered by something, there's a little bit of a thing in my head that I think sometimes of like, feelings are not fact. So you can be triggered by another person's storyline or another person's conversation, but that doesn't mean that they are required to change their behavior or owe you their behavior as a response to that. Like that's your journey to go on, but let's be a little bit more cognizant of discussing our own projections in some of this, because then we're encouraging another kind of toxic cycle of another person editing their own storyline or in their own story in their real life, which is in itself dishonest. Like, let's just give a little bit more air to some of this, noting that it sometimes we're not afforded that opportunity. I don't know if that any of that makes sense.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, that people should be free to, Emily should be free to say, I was trying to lose weight, without being vilified for saying she was trying to lose weight. And then also, you know, with whatever she's dealing with, that she's having her own unique experience, which I do think that this kind of, you know, compulsory working out, that has happened to a lot of people. That's happened to me. You start doing it, it feels good. Then you get into this cycle and you're just like, I just want to go back to the gym. Do I really want to work out today? Or just feel like I should work out today? It's just, it can be a lot. And she's in that moment. And I do think it's relatable. I do think a lot of us have been there.
Yeah. In the ways that we kind of like, think of how you speak to maybe a friend potentially. If we could use some of that own language and framework on ourselves, how much happier could we potentially be? And let's maybe also use that when we're talking about housewives now and again. And like, Emily is allowed to want to lose weight. Sometimes we look at these women and their bodies and think that they owed something to us, like, and maybe it's a positive thing to talk about a woman who's on the show who looks different potentially than other women on the show, where we're talking about breaking some of the boundaries here. I've had conversations with people on Housewives where they talk about the benefit of ex-housewife joining the show. She's beautiful, she's thin. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a benefit? We're talking about a person's weight as a benefit for them being a housewife on TV? Like, that's where we're still at that point in society. And it's like, talking about some of this, but also I think there are some people who were potentially upset when they see housewives who've maybe lost weight. And at the end of the day, I understand and recognize it, but also they do not owe their bodies to us. And also it gets into a larger conversation about maybe the feeling some people have about needing to lose weight, or the feeling some people have of being upset at the ways their weight is used against them, including by followers who are trying to think of ways to insult someone and make them feel bad and use their weight as a weapon.
Yeah. And so that's one of those things. I can't stand that. I really cannot. And I mean, that I just feel like it's so hard, it's so difficult to be a woman. And then the way that Bravo has morphed and changed since it originally started, people just looked like, you know, normal humans in the beginning. And now this level, the bar that is there, I can't imagine anything more terrifying than going on Watch What Happens Live as a Real Housewife. Like the level of glam and the thought into your outfit and your hair, and you know you're going to get eaten up no matter what you do, and people talking about everything about your body. And then, you know, on some of the shows when they do, and I know it's people, I get it. I get it that people are like, oh no, it's funny. Like, not today neck, not today ankles. Like, it's that it's something where they make fun of each other, but at the same time, like, the pressure must be immense. And so, I mean, I've always tried to adhere to, like, I do not talk about people's, like, physical bodies. Like, if they bring it up on the show, then, you know, they bring it up on the show, and we talk about whatever issue it is that they're having. But for a lot of these women, like, we don't know what's going on in their personal lives. You know, even Teresa on the last episode of New Jersey, Dolores says she weighs 3 pounds. She's under so much stress. And so in that moment, you say to yourself, oh, I thought she was, you know, looking really fit, but we don't know what's going on with her. I thought she was in a fitness kick. And Dolores is saying it's stress on her body. And so at that point, you know, you say to yourself, okay, something's going on with her. But otherwise, I don't think it's, you know, people's bodies are open for, like, commentary or critique. You know, that's already such a nightmare to be a real housewife. So I hope that Emily is not getting anybody criticizing her, saying, like, you know, how dare you be talking about losing weight and all the things that you're saying, and people projecting onto her, because all of us are carrying different things that we've been carrying probably since puberty, you know, when it comes to this topic. So I hope she's getting nothing but support.
Yeah. And also, Emily as an individual is not responsible to uphold any kind of, like, version or vision of what wellness looks like, what a person's body positivity should be, which also can be really flawed thinking of body positivity means you can never want to change your body, otherwise you're not being positive about your body, versus, like, our bodies just genuinely can change over the course of years. And let's get out of the conversation of weight and also have conversations around nuance, which are being presented to us by Emily and also Emily in her conversation with Shane. And I think at the end of the day, we really, truly have to wrap. But at the end of the day, sometimes we think of housewives through the lens of ownership, of, like, I have the right to own how I feel about this person's behavior, and maybe this person's behavior in and of itself because of my membership into the Bravo community. And I would love if we got a little bit out of, for anyone who feels very involved in this, out of the conversation of owning another person's weight. Like, this is being presented to us in a different way, but the network itself has crossed lines, including previously journeys about Emily and weight loss, where they showed the scale well after she said she was uncomfortable doing that. And they show that mm-hmm. in an edited episode. Like, what the network showed about Erica Framework making fun of Crystal, when Crystal has been very open and honest and talking about her journey living and experiencing life with bulimia, and the way that the framework around those episodes of Beverly Hills were framed, where this is used as to be continued drama and comedy when you're talking about someone who has lived with a very serious eating disorder. It's like some of the ownership here, I just wish there was a little bit more sensitivity around weight specifically, and that being used not just in how these women tell their stories, but our perception of, like, what a person should be rewarded for and penalized against. And it's very complicated. So I'm so thankful I brought this up when we had to wrap 15 minutes ago, because, like, it is genuinely one of the more complicated conversations. And my opinion is not the opinion. And also, I don't feel the need to hold myself against my own experiences, because I'm an awful lot more than someone who lives with an eating disorder. And it also doesn't mean that every decision that I all make for the rest of my life needs to be weighed against that. People are complicated. There's the potential for a lot of growth and nuance here. And if we just hold people in buckets and use those buckets as a way to keep our control over them, imagine how well that's going to go. So this convo will continue. Thank you so much for joining this 16-part episode. I could not more highly encourage that people follow you on social at Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo, that people listen to your podcast High and Low. Any closing thoughts?
No, just I'm enjoying Orange County. and we'll see where it goes.
Incredible. Can't wait for the feedback on this conversation. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Listen to the Patreon, number one way to support the pod. 2 hours, 2-part bonus episode out now, talking about all things Orange County, behind the scenes tea, LOL tea, about my recording with Shan, an awful lot more at patreon.com/andysgirls. BBDB, pleasure to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, guys, thanks to you for listening, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.